from Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio, focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour. And this is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. We are rejoicing to be looking face-to-face with Julie Sly, the editor of the Catholic Herald. Julie?
Hi, Bob. How are you?
Very good. What's it say on your mask? Everybody, now we have fashion face masks.
Oh, this one was given to me. Fired up.
Oh, fired up. I have one of those, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's sort of hushy on the inside, so it's good for a cold day.
Yeah, it's warmer. I expect people, when they go jogging or riding their bike on a cold day, are going to start wearing it just because they're warm.
Sometimes I do on my bike.
Yeah.
Or I have like a couple different little, like I call them buffs or scarves that have, they're actually from my Woman Tours company. I've been on a few trips with.
And yes, you have.
And you can wear the buff in 20 different ways. I can't remember all the 20 different ways. But one of them, you can put it around your neck and then just pull it up over your nose and mouth when you go in and buy a vitamin water or something.
So you actually travel the world by bike, right?
No, I try and go on a couple rides a week, one longer, one shorter. It's harder when daylight savings is
But when you
off.
Go to a place, haven't you gone overseas, though? Have you gone overseas?
Not cycling, mostly the U.S.
Do people fly their bikes over, or do they?
Oh, they fly, yeah.
Really?
Bike flight. Or when I've gone, I usually rent a bike, although I'm going on a tour of just like a hub tour where you stay at one hotel in Tucson in March, as Tucson has a pretty vast array of bike trails.
Yes, it does.
Yes, so I haven't been there in a long time.
Tucson's a
so that one we stay at one place and then you do a different ride every day. Is it Mount Lemmon or something?
Mount Lemmon?
One of the national parks. Yeah,
Mount Lemmon.
Now that one I'm driving
to. It's a ski resort outside of Tucson.
I'm not sure I'll make it all the way. But
no, what you want to do is get a ride to the top
and then come down.
It's just all these switchbacks.
Well, I rode up Cadillac Mountain in what's the part? Oh gosh, in Bar Harbor.
Oh, I mean,
Acadia National Park. We had to get up at like, for a lot of people drive up there for the sunrise. Is it the first sunrise in the Western Hemisphere or in the U.S. or something?
Yeah.
First moment of sunrise.
Wow.
So that one we did like 4:30 in the morning with our lights on.
And you just come downhill?
No, well, we rode up, and it's a road that I had never been on
before. I think one of the big mountains in Hawaii, they drive you up, and you just come down.
Well, some of the people drove. I rode, and then we rode back down, which was very scenic. But was a little, it's a little scary going up there in the dark with just your bike lights on, and then people were in their cars, so, know, that helped with some light. But when you don't know the road... You know, if I'm on something where I know the road, you're not quite as nervous.
I understand some people now are riding their bikes on the way. It's a great way.
Oh, yeah. They've offered that. Yeah, that one I think probably you should walk it, though. I guess you can do either. A lot of people are getting e-bikes because it's making it easier on their knees. And so I haven't done that, but I have several friends who, and I think the price is only going to come down. The batteries are going to get better.
Yeah.
Yeah, so for someone who, it's really lengthening their time that they can ride if they're
absolutely
a little bit older. Or actually people are getting them for around town who don't want to train or anything, but they just want to use them for errands.
To get around,
To get around, they're great.
With the price of gas, it's cheaper than driving the car.
Yes,
for sure.
So, a few bike rides now and then, that's good.
It's good for you.
Yeah.
Well.
So,
I think, if I've heard so many wonderful things about the way in Spain.
Yes.
Well, I guess it actually starts
Camino
in France.
Camino de Santiago.
Camino de Santiago. That any way you can do it, I think is a great thing.
Yeah, they do it both ways. And then, of course, some people do part of it. They don't do the whole thing.
Right.
Isn't part of it in France, too?
But I believe it starts in France.
Oh, yeah. It starts
the,
in
the
France.
Whole, which okay. is maybe 400 miles or something
yes.
like that.
Yeah.
But the one just, the I guess the more popular one is about 110 miles
oh,
or something like
okay.
that. And we've yeah. had a number of people from the Diocese of Sacramento do that.
Oh, yeah, lots of people. Yeah, I was always worried on that about blisters.
Yeah.
I can't see, even if I switch shoes, I can't see myself. I just see my feet covered in blisters when I envision it.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about the Herald, the yes, November-December issue.
We had you on before. We were unable to finish it because it's so action-packed this year.
Or because I'm so quiet and shy.
Yeah. That's it's all about stewardship.
Well, it's about stewardship,
and,
yes.
It's the stories. Wonderful young man on the cover here. And we've been lucky enough to have some of these people on the air as well.
Oh, I think you had Luke and
yes.
and Sophia
yes.
Anderson, his sister
yes.
from Parati Global, the organization
yeah.
they started. I think you've already had them on.
Yes, we did.
Yeah.
Very impressive. Very impressive
yeah.
people.
They're both graduates of Holy Spirit mm-hmm. School in Fairfield.
Right.
Yeah. And let's see, we have another article about St. Patrick Parish in Grass Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And they have, as some of our parishes had, really started a more intentional stewardship as a way of life program. And so earlier, the pastor is Father Alexander Estrella. He's also pastor at the Immaculate Conception Parish in Downeyville and St. Denise Parish in Nevada City, which
right.
we always debate on how we
how to pronounce it.
Is it Hannes or Denise?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
Is it St. Basil or St. Basil?
I don't know.
Yeah. I had that experience. I was.
Is it a spice or not a spice?
I was in Vallejo at one of the annual seminary and dinner, you know, the annual vocations dinner.
Yes.
And they move it around, which is a great idea. And it was a hot summer evening, even in Vallejo.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, and the Knights of Columbus always help sponsor
right.
these things.
Right.
And the women who were there were selling tickets to get into the event.
Yeah.
And the men, the Knights were over selling beer and soft drinks. And so I was emceeing. So I'm going, St. Basil. And you look it up and you can see six different ways to pronounce it. And so I asked the women, they're parishioners, right? And they said, oh, it's St. Basil. I said, okay, thank you very much.
Uh-huh.
I go over to get a Diet Pepsi, and I say to the guys, I said, so how's this been? Oh, it's St. Basil. And I'm, now what do I do? So, you never know.
Well, so St. Patrick's, there are a couple parishioners who are very instrumental in implementing this process, Tommy Jacobs and Michelle McDaniel. Michelle McDaniel's actually on the staff. And they've been trying to do a range of things to implement things to foster stewardship. First, they wanted people to do intentional prayer, formation, try and have a welcoming spirit, be grateful for what you have, try and find ways to give back to the Lord for what you're grateful for in your own life. They've been partnering with a company in Georgia that a number of our parishes are using Catholic Stewardship Consultants.
Mm-hmm. Out of Augusta, Georgia.
And so they've been unfolding various media, messages, events to facilitate growth of stewardship in their own parish. And they, I believe they've done, with the 800 families there, they've done a monthly newsletter, parish survey, a retreat for stewardship renewal, and training ministry leaders about stewardship.
And they have been really tremendously successful in a
they actually just
short
have start, just started this, yeah. Nearly 40% of the parishioners responded to the parish survey, which they felt was good.
I think that's, not knowing a whole lot about that, I think that's a very good percentage to get 40% to respond.
So. Yeah.
I think it's off the chart.
Yeah. And so they're just trying to get people to think beyond commitment to Sunday Mass and the sacraments, but to go beyond that, respond to God's gifts in your own life through gratitude, through being generous to others, to try and practice holiness in your life. Tommy says, our need to give is greater than the church's need to receive. We all have an internal need to give of our time, our talent, and our treasure, and that is a response of gratitude. So they're continuing to do this in their parish with a lot of success, and they hope to involve more parishioners. So I believe we have a number of parishes that are working with Catholic Stewardship consultants to do this.
Yeah, they are. And, you know, the another thing that Tommy said that really struck with me, the biggest opportunity for stewardship, once we get through the basics, is realizing how parents and leaders of families can be the priest of the domestic church. We don't think of ourselves as priests.
Right.
But in effect, I mean, we're sort of, it's almost a contradiction in terms of we're lay priests, if you will, in the domestic church, meaning the family.
Right.
And that's where it all starts and ends. Because as we hear from so many people involved in ministry, that if the parents are just dropping the kids off, and then the kids come home and they turn on the ball game or something, you know, not what you talk about. And if they're not getting it reinforced at home, it's going to fade away or may fade away.
Not an easy job for parents, for
not
sure.
Not an easy job.
Yeah, with a lot of other influences in our culture and a lot of other activities.
Because of that, it's an even more important job for parents.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's it's funny. I think we've all had excuses when we were little kids about, are we going to go to Mass today?
And, yes.
And now kids have about 400 more excuses than we had growing up.
Oh, probably. Yeah.
I have to do my homework.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah.
I have soccer practice on Sunday. Yeah. And none of them are good enough, but sometimes they think they are.
Mm-hmm.
And if the parents say, okay, that's important. You got a big game next week. Yeah, you should probably go to practice. I mean, when you're on a team, you should go to practice, but not instead of going to Mass.
Right. Did you find it a struggle with your own kids?
Not too much.
Uh-huh.
The thing that I was stunned was after we got in the habit of watching on TV because of the pandemic, our son, who was about 14 at the time, said, I miss going to Mass.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. You know, I don't know if he said you guys should have brought donuts for after Mass or what it was, but it was quite refreshing to hear.
Well, a food bribe is always an idea.
Yeah. You know, but that was very encouraging, you know. No, I didn't get that a lot, but you know, I mean, I've noticed, especially with athletics, that kids really are, they're doing things on Sundays that did just, I don't mean necessarily my kids, but just that's kind of an expectation that people see Sunday as a day for practice or games even, you know.
Right.
And it used to be Sunday was sacred. You know, nobody scheduled anything on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
that's greatly changed.
Yeah, it really has.
Yeah.
Really has. So,
speaking of gratitude, we have a really good column by Brian Plotta. He's not from our diocese, but he is a writer, spiritual director, workshop facilitator. And he writes a weekly column called Simple Wisdom. And I love his opening paragraph. I tried for years to flip off the negative attitude switch and click on joy. My friend Paul told me, I read books, memorize scripture passages about the joy of the Lord. I even posted a Choose Joy sticker on my refrigerator. But it wasn't until I practiced gratitude and that I finally experienced joy.
Wow.
So his friend tells him, every morning before I get out of bed, I hoon in my sheets for 5 minutes or so and bring to mind at least three things for which I'm grateful. I call it my gift of gratitude ritual. And if you've read a lot of things on mindfulness and other things about how to stay in the present, this is something that is recommended to people, whether they're spiritual or not spiritual. But if you can take a moment and think of three things you're grateful for. I've even heard someone do it, say, do it with a friend and you only have 1 second to spout out each 10 things you're grateful for. So you're not mulling it over. You're just, you know, you're just shouting it out.
Can I have a cup of coffee first?
Maybe.
First 5 minutes in the morning is probably my least grateful time of the day.
Oh, okay. Like, well, maybe you can do it at night before you go to bed.
First question is, do I really have to get up? Is it really that late? You know, and is that my alarm going off? Yeah, those are the first three questions I ask.
So Brian writes, he tried it. As I snuggled in my bed sheets on wintry November dawn, I was thankful for my dad who fought in World War II, all the other veterans and military men and women who served and continue to preserve our country's freedom. I put health on my mental gratitude list and my wife, children, grandchildren, and friends. Now each morning when my alarm rings, rather than rumbling, is it really morning, or jumping out of bed in a cold panic, I give myself the gift of 5 minutes to practice gratitude. And you can do it as a little meditation, too. I think it's wise advice. Cultivating an attitude of gratitude is good medicine for our souls. It focuses our thoughts away from the negative brain drain that crowds out joy. It's like celebrating Thanksgiving all year round. So I think it's a good philosophy. It definitely brings us to think about our own gifts and just simple things we're thankful for. I really noticed that during this pandemic, you saw people saying, I noticed that flower in my yard today.
Yeah.
My iris bloomed.
Yeah.
You know, maybe stuff that you kind of took for granted before. I know I certainly did that.
Yeah. The simple pleasures, if you will, the simple joys became much more meaningful. Mm-hmm. I know we had much more meaningful time with our kids. And never really got into that, woe is me, why can't we do this, why can't we do that? It was just sort of, okay, this is the way things are.
Right.
We're all going to get through it together.
Yeah.
But really did enjoy, you know, going for a ride or something, you know, in a way that, that maybe we didn't enjoy as much before.
Right. I seem to remember your wife, Shelley, writing something about the hammock in your backyard.
Yes, the hammock in the backyard.
Was there fighting over that?
It's actually a
big
hammock.
Or you had to have a schedule.
You could get a couple of people in that hammock, and it way in the backyard by the back fence, and that was a great place of solitude for somebody to just go be outside, be in the fresh air. I think one of the kids actually spent the whole night out there in the summer,
and thoroughly
enjoyed it, you know. And the fresh air does you a lot of good when you're cooped up all the time.
So anyway, that's something to read in our face section. And we also I talked about our cover story. The other one I want to talk about is related to stewardship, and it's about how many parishioners at Good Shepherd Parish in Elk Grove are involved with Works of Mercy. It's actually called Works of Mercy Ministry to help the homeless and poor in Elk Grove. And they've done a number of things. Betty. What is Betty's last name? Since I didn't write this story, I'm not as... Betty May. There we go. Betty May is the ministry lead, and it was... Works of Mercy was formalized about a year ago when they received a permit from Sac County to function essentially as a food bank from the parish. And so they're subject to annual fees and inspection. Every Monday morning begins with prayer as ministry participants gather in the parish center's kitchen. They bless the food and they say prayers to find those in need. And on this particular morning when our photographer was there, the volunteers assembled pulled pork sandwiches, turkey pot pie, or a holiday turkey dinner. And then they receive excess things from stores in the area. Mm-hmm. They also pass on surplus to Loaves and Fishes in Sacramento, Christy Cares Outreach, Volunteers of America, and the Salvation Army. They just are involved in a lot of things. They donated fruit to different food banks. They donated foods from restaurants. They go and visit the homeless in different encampments in and around Elk Grove. I believe students from the school even help assembly lunches and things that they're going to distribute to the homeless. They seek contributions to put together 24 of the 100 collective meals prepared every Monday. They also prepare blessing bags for the homeless packed with appropriate donations from the season, from socks to sunscreen. They also have confirmation students involved in putting all this together. Earlier this year, they helped the Elk Grove Homeless Assistant Resource Team facilitate the move of 3 homeless families from transitional housing to permanent apartment homes. And parishioners donated new or gently used items to give these families a fresh start in their new home. The St. Vincent de Paul of Good Shepherd provided additional food and supplies, while the Knights of Columbus Launa Creek Council coordinated with Works of Mercy to handle the physical work of move-in day for the 3 households. And I believe they're all living in the same apartment complex, and we have a couple of the households.
Well, with a lot of their food, too, they go out to where it's not like we open the door to church and
no, they go out and distribute.
They go out and distribute it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it looks from this photo that these people know how to make a pulled pork sandwich.
Yeah, I wasn't there. Oh, those do look good, especially it's around dinner time right now.
It's a Monday, right?
Let me look at those more closely. Those look pretty good.
They look very good, yeah.
On page 25 in the magazine. You want to be hungry right now.
Yeah.
But we have a picture of Betty with Brittany and her 3 children in their new apartment that they secured.
It looks gorgeous, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. And so they were able to move into permanent housing. It also shows Betty Mae and Darlene in Darlene's new apartment in Elk Grove. So she was able to get into permanent housing. I believe, too, that her grandchildren are able to visit her there. I know that, I mean, we have such a huge homeless problem
we
in
really
Sacramento
do.
County. It's nice to see that this it can work to get people into permanent housing.
Yeah, it really is. It's a great day when that happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, indeed. Well, Julie, this is wonderful stuff. Thanks so much for
thank you.
Taking the time to be with us today. And God bless you for
Thanks for having
the rest of the year.
Okay.
Thanks so much.
All right, bye.
We'll take a quick break. Back with more on a Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916 916- 972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour. We'd like to thank all the wonderful people and organizations, businesses in town and throughout the Diocese of Sacramento who have provided underwriting for the Bishop's Hour, some in the last few years, some have been with us for a very long time. If you would like to be an underwriter for the Bishop's Radio Hour, it's a wonderful opportunity to support this mission and also to support the diocese and also to get some recognition for your organization or for your business. The easiest way to do this is to give us a shout, send us an email, radio@scd.org, and we can give you all the details about helping to underwrite the Bishop's Radio Hour. Again, that's radio@scd.org.
Hello, this is Jennifer Campbell, Director of Trinity Pines Catholic Center. You're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
That's me. Thanks, Jennifer, for that wonderful introduction. Thanks for all the great work you do here in the vast Diocese of Sacramento. Well, we're pleased and honored to welcome in Rabbi Seth Castleman, the head of the Exodus Project. Seth, good to hear your voice today.
Bob, always nice to hear yours.
Thanks so much for taking the time to be with us on this chilly winter. Came quickly here in the valley.
Indeed, indeed. I often say that if you think of fall as more a long weekend, you won't be disappointed.
Absolutely. Seth, it's been a while since you've been on the program, and tell for those that are new to the program or maybe have not heard you before, tell us a little bit about the Exodus Project.
Thank you, Bob. It's always a delight to be on the program with you. Exodus Project is a program helping people return from incarceration and prison and jail back into their community, our community in the greater Sacramento area. It was a vision of Bishop Soto to expand the prison ministry that the diocese does and to help in what in some ways is the hardest time for people who are incarcerated, which is right when they get to the gate and returning back. And so over the last 4 years, we've been expanding and growing this project called Exodus Project to help people, men and women, who are locked up in county jail or state prison or federal penitentiaries, and helping them in the last month of their incarceration and then helping them in the first months of their return. And that can be with social services, with housing, with employment, with mentoring, with spiritual care, with clothing from the St. Vincent de Paul thrift store, all sorts of different resources that we can access and plug them into. And many of your callers know about Exodus. Some of them, or many of your listeners, have been supporters and donors, which we always appreciate. And we're always looking for employers, too, who might want to give somebody a second chance for a decent job.
So 4 years ago, when you first, you know, were developing this program, if you will, and now, what were your sort of your anticipations, expectations, et cetera, and what's the reality? Where were the bumps in the road? Where were the joys as well?
Sure, sure. Well, we started off specifically as a mentoring program, training people to be mentors one-on-one, and we're doing that. We have about 50 mentors And what we didn't foresee was the need for the social services to go along with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's an important combination that if you're going to offer the spiritual and the psychological and the help with recovery that so many people are struggling with addiction and struggling with life and want somebody to mentor them or want some spiritual counseling, you also need to provide the food, the shelter, mm-hmm. the basic needs. So that was sort of something that we didn't necessarily plan on in the beginning, but that's really come out of it. And it, of course, is very difficult and also very gratifying. People come into my office, 4, 5, 6 of them every day, come into the office looking for services, looking for support and help. And we can help many of them. Some of them occasionally we can't, or some people get frustrated with us or get frustrated with the system. But mostly people are extremely grateful.
Give us for instance, if somebody who comes in, what they're looking for, and then what action you can take or hope to take.
Right. So often people are homeless when they get out of incarceration, whether sure. they were homeless before or whether they lost their housing. So we have a program currently that we run with Sacramento Self-Help Housing that is in large part funded by some CARES Act funding through the Department of Human Assistance and the County of Sacramento, who've been very generous with us. And we're able to provide some emergency housing in terms of a hotel stay.
Mm-hmm.
But somebody to get into a hotel is going to need an ID. So if they don't have an ID, we need to get them down to DMV and help them out and getting the paperwork and getting the identification that they're going to need and then mm-hmm. get them over to the hotel and then transportation, getting them a bus pass. And then often, you know, if they had a job before they were incarcerated, very few have a job waiting for them that they get out. We have a great employment specialist, Chris Marzan, who helps
right.
people find jobs and get them plugged back into the employment and then potentially moving them on to one of our transitional houses that we run with Sacramento Self-Help Housing. Or maybe they have their own place that they can move into or that we can help them transition into. And clothing. It's not uncommon for them to come out with just the clothes on their back and they've lost everything else. So getting them a voucher and getting them down to the thrift store so they can do some shopping. I had a woman come in just before I was leaving the office this evening who was so grateful that we got her down to the thrift store. She had only the clothes on her back and she was now wearing some new to her clothes and she said they were great and the thrift store folk were all wonderful and she's thinking of applying for a job down there as well.
Oh, that's great. The St. Vincent Paul's thrift store is the people there are just they're just a joy to work with.
Fabulous folk, and we get many of our folks down there employed. They're a great employer too.
That's great. So how difficult is the employment element? I know we had Chris Marzan on, and it sounds like he's just doing a wonderful job.
He is, and one of the silver linings to this COVID pandemic is that there are a lot of employers looking for workers. So
if people want to work
even with a criminal record, in warehouses, in restaurants, in all sorts of places, we get people jobs. Housing is a much harder nut to crack. The housing market is so tight and so expensive, and so many people are applying for a single unit. And if you have a criminal record, that's an easy thing to then just sort of nix that person from the list.
And
so
there's
getting
people
housing is much harder.
There are no rules or regulations about that, right? If 10 people apply and you can say, I mean, there are laws about, you know, discrimination, et cetera, based on
right.
a variety of categories.
No, you're allowed to discriminate.
Yeah.
No, you're allowed to discriminate in that regard in terms of renting a place.
Which makes it just really, really difficult. Is there any estimate at all of the homeless population, how many of them, one of the primary reasons they are homeless is because of a criminal record?
I don't have a number. I mean, there's a real intersection between poverty, incarceration, homelessness,
mm-hmm.
and then, of course, the other two pieces that we haven't mentioned yet, mental health and addiction.
Right.
So many of the people coming out of county jail are struggling with methamphetamine addiction, and often it's treating an underlying mental health condition, and the drug addiction is just part of the dual diagnosis, as they call it, when you have both mental health and addiction at the same time.
Do people, I mean, I call me naive, is there a lot of drug use within a prison? Or is, I mean, it's not legal, but...
There is. It's certainly available. It's certainly available. I think less so in the county jail, more so in the prisons. I mean, I've had people tell me they've used inside, or they, you know, people, there are ways that they use fruit to make alcohol. And,
right.
But I also, people honestly tell me, yeah, it's in here, but I'm not using. And I ask everybody, what's your drug of choice, and how long have you been sober, and what's your longest sobriety, and... so it's a direct conversation we have, with everyone we work with, and work helping people get to meetings, helping people get to treatment. There are people that we say, look, our house is a sober living environment, but it's not a treatment facility, and what you really need is treatment. Let's get you connected to the county with their AOD assessment, their alcohol and other drugs, and, get you into a place that really gives treatment and full-on care, and then maybe you come to us afterwards.
Are those facilities just overrun with people, though?
There can be wait lists, but I find that if people really need care, they can get it. They can get it. Homeless shelters are definitely overrun, and those can be hard to find. But in terms of getting into a drug treatment program, they're definitely out there. And there's definitely some availability.
So what are your biggest challenges, Seth?
Getting people into recovery and keeping people in recovery, getting good mentors is always a challenge. We do two or three trainings a year. It's an 18-hour training, and then after that, over 2 weeks. And then after that, it's about an 8-hour-a-month commitment. To become a mentor, and we're always looking for good folks to do that. Funding is always mercurial. We have it one day, and then that year's funding runs out, and we're looking for more. We've gotten some generous donations from the bishop and from the diocese and from individual donors and foundations, and now from probation and the public defender's office. So funding us to do work with people when they get released from jail or are awaiting trial, but we're always looking for more funding to be able to do the work that we're trying to do.
How does the government, if you will, law enforcement, probation, the courts, is this a cooperative project?
It is. We sort of walk that line where we definitely cooperate with the law enforcement and share. We have good relations with the sheriff's department, who runs the jail and the branch jail, and probation and parole are referring people to us all the time, and they appreciate the work we're doing, and we appreciate what they're trying to do. And at the same time, we really align ourselves with the clients that we're working with, and we don't report to probation or parole. So if somebody comes in and says, I used last night, I'll say, well, I'm sure it was hard for you to tell me that. I appreciate you telling me. Now, how can we, you know, move forward from here? And just so we're clear, I'm not reporting this to probation. That's not my role. That's between you and probation.
Do you work with the Department of Corrections?
We have good working relationships.
Yeah, with Department of Corrections as well?
We do some. We're currently primarily focused on people coming out of county jail and secondarily people coming out of prison, and that's just kind of where we put our focus. There's so many people coming out of jail, and they get so many fewer services coming out, that's been where we've been focused. So we will work with people coming out of prison, but we have less. Currently, our funding is more focused on the county level.
Does the reason they were incarcerated in the first place have anything to do with who is a likely candidate to be part of your project or not?
To some extent. If we're going to match them for mentoring, I want them not to have had a violent incident in the last year so that the mentor can feel comfortable about being safe. Most of the people we're working with, as I said, a lot of them have drug addiction issues or alcoholism and DUIs. Others, it's theft and burglary and car theft and that comes from the addiction. In our houses, we generally we can't take sex offenders because of the location and the conditions of the houses. We'll work with people that have convicted of sex offense in other ways. We can help them with employment or help them with other resources, but not with housing. So we do sometimes look at the factors of their case for sure.
So let's talk about the mentors. Do most of them have a pretty good idea what they were getting into? And I suspect each mentor's experience is going to be a little bit different.
Exactly. We have mentors who have themselves been incarcerated. We have mentors who themselves have addiction issues and are in recovery. We have others who that's far from their experience, but are able to find the compassion and the understanding, and I help them tap into their own sense of brokenness and healing to become the wounded healer and to help these other people that are broken in their own way. So we have people that are in their 20s. We have people that are in their 80s. We definitely have a lot of wonderful Catholic parishioners as mentors. We have men and women. We match men with men and women with women. So, you know, to some extent, a lot of them don't really know what they're getting into until they get into it, but by and large, they do a great job.
Is there a spiritual element to this as well?
Well, so like much missionary work, there's the spiritual element of the many of the mentors are themselves spiritually motivated, and it inspires them to do the work.
Right.
And then in the relationship between mentor and mentee, that's on a case-by-case basis. If the mentee is interested in the spiritual or the religious, then great, we'll offer that. We've had mentors and mentees doing Bible study. We've had mentors and mentees going to houses of worship together. And in other relationships, that's not what they're looking for.
Right.
They're looking for something different. So it really just kind of depends. And we definitely don't proselytize or push it.
And I presume it's not just a lottery draw. You try to match the person coming out with a mentor that you think it's going to work.
I do. Sometimes on bad days, I feel like a lottery draw would have worked better. But on good days, I feel like, you know, this is my job to match people up and to try to find who's going to be a good fit personality-wise.
Right.
And everybody sounds like they really want to be in the program when they're inside. The rubber hits the road, and the big test is once they get out and they get back to their, get back into the world. And sometimes it's a great fit, and they stay connected for months, even years, stay connected. And other times it's not such a great fit, and I find them somebody else, or they just sort of fall off, and we match the mentor with somebody else.
Is there a trust issue in terms of the person who's been incarcerated coming out and feeling, no, this is some government thing and it's just their way to keep their thumb on me? Or is there that kind of concern on their part?
Not so much that. We have a very good reputation amongst the people in the jail. Word on the street is we do a good job. But I think there is a trust issue around who is this person and what's their motivation and what's in it for them, and and sort of, you know, are they going to be able to handle my pain and my anger, and are they going to be able to handle who I really am? So I don't think people, and it's a voluntary program, so if somebody's really worried about it, they're just not going to sign up for it.
Sure.
But I think it takes some time and some relationship building between mentor and mentee.
Is there some sort of legal advantage for a person to participate in this? I mean, with parole, with, you know, maybe you've got a parole hearing, that does it help them to say, yeah, I'm part of the Exodus Project?
It can, especially in some of the alternative courts, the collaborative courts, the diversionary courts, the mental health courts, the addiction court, the drug court. Sometimes they can't get, they'll get out if they have a place to go to live. So they'll call me and they'll say, will you write me a letter to say, you know, that you're providing me housing because I can't, my public defender can't get me out until mm-hmm. I have a place to go. So sometimes it does, and sometimes we're able to write the letters. And we work collaboratively with the public defender's office and with the collaborative courts and the diversionary courts. So it can work in their favor, for sure.
So let's talk about mentors again. I presume you always need mentors.
We always love mentors, and we always need more. Yes, we have about 50 active mentors, about maybe 30 men and 20 women. And it just takes a compassionate heart, the ability to listen, some amount of self-confidence and humility. Mm-hmm. We especially need mentors of racial diversity, mm-hmm. but we take all kinds.
Tell us how people can get involved.
So they can find us on the diocese website, or they can find us at exodus-project.org. Mm-hmm. That's exodus-project.org. Or they can call us directly at the office at 916-669-0611. And we're always happy to hear from people.
916-669-0611. And then your first step, once you think this is maybe somebody that would work, is the training.
We send them an application. They fill out an application and give us a bit of their experience and what they're interested in, and then I meet with them. Nowadays, I often meet with people on Zoom, and then if it's a good fit and it feels like they're going to be a good part of it, then the next training is coming up in March.
Oh, very good. And what, maybe just a thumbnail of the training.
Yeah, we work on boundaries, we work on addiction, we work on, components on trauma, we do components on communication. We have a lot of the training is done by folks who have been incarcerated and tell their story and also do role playing. We also do a lot of role playing as part of it as well. It's an engaging, interesting 18 hours that surprisingly whizzes by for people. And we even provide lunch and snacks.
That's good. Spread over 18 hours spread over how many days?
4 days.
4 days.
Two evenings,
okay.
And two Saturdays. Two Thursday nights and two Saturday days, yep.
Not 6 a.m. to midnight on one day.
No. Not at all. We're very good. Very comfortable for people.
Very good. I suspect boundaries are real important to the success of the program.
It's a balance.
Yeah.
It's a balance between, as I say, it's like a bedside manner for a doctor. You don't want to be three beds away from the patient, but you also don't want to be, you know, metaphorically climbing into the bed with
right.
the patient either.
Right.
You need to, you know, be next to the bedside. You need to be upright. You need to be compassionate and close, but also able to say, hey, you know, this is what I can do, but this is what I can't do. And
right.
we have very strong boundaries around certain rules, around no giving money and directly to the clients and things like that. And then there are other things that grow over time, how much information about yourself you share.
Uh-huh.
Some of that's going to be based on how you get to know them, and what you share on the first meeting and what you share after 6 months is going to be somewhat different. So we do a lot of training around how that develops and grows with time.
Well, yeah, I'm glad you're running this program and I'm not.
Thank you, Bob.
It sounds like you've got your work cut out for you, and you're doing the Lord's work. I'll tell you, that's.
I really appreciate it.
Yeah, that's wonderful. We're lucky to have you here in the diocese. I hear that all the time, and you know, it's one of those rewards you don't even know sometimes. Maybe you won't hear how many people you've helped or what. What one thing you said may have changed a life, you know, and so we greatly appreciate it. And God's blessings to you and your family during these holy days coming up.
Thank you, Bob, and you and yours. Always nice to talk with you. Great to hear your voice.
Thanks so much, Seth. Take care. That's Rabbi Seth Castleman, who runs the Exodus Project here for the Diocese of Sacramento. And really, it's not a program of the state of California or the county of Sacramento or the county of Yolo or Solano or El Dorado or Yuba or any of the other counties. It's just, but it sure helps all those counties. And if it's one of those issues that is, you know, you go all the way from lock them up and throw away the key attitude to really helping someone. I mean, virtually everybody who is convicted of a crime, other than the most serious of crimes, will eventually one day be out and walking among us. And the more resources, the more help they can be provided to return to society, become, quote unquote, we hear this a lot, productive members of society, the better the chance that we're all going to live in a safer and more welcoming environment. And if you look at the recidivism rates in all 50 states, they're way too high. And part of that is just the way things are going to be. But in other regards, you know, it's really maybe we're not doing enough to really integrate these people back into society. It's not a easy job, that's for sure. And there are no quick answers. But the Exodus Project is certainly doing its best to help on a one-on-one basis all of these people get back on their feet. Again, it is the Exodus Project. The phone number is, well, you go to the diocese website, scd.org, and the phone number is 916-669-0611. And they do have extensive, it's 18 hours, I mean, but it's pretty extensive and in-depth training. And, you know, you got to have the heart for it. And I fully understand there are many people that say, well, this is not something I want to do. It's not something that appeals to me, et cetera, et cetera. But for those that do have that heart and that desire, it's certainly worth checking out because it's really an excellent project. Now, the Diocese of Sacramento has some ordination anniversaries. The bishop's office puts these out every month. There's some wonderful ones. Are some deacons. Deacon Daniel Blanton, ordination anniversary was just passed December the 5th of 2005. Deacon Jaime Garcia, December the 6th of 2003. And Deacon Rodolfo Kay, December the 9th of 2017. Some of our priests, a lot of December ordinations for our ordination anniversaries for our priest, Father Sohn Canicelli, December the 12th, Our Lady of Guadalupe, December the 12th of 1987, Father Diogo Baptista, December the 14th of 1969, Father John Sullivan, December 16th, 1972, Father Jose Campos, December 21st of 1990, Father Abraham Chaco, December 26th of 1988, Father Jose Estaniel, December 27th of 1985, Father Aldrin Basarte, December 27th, 1996, Father Kavungal Davy, December 27, 1996, Father Davy. Father Joseph Sebastian, December 27, 2008. And Father Josie Vatothu, December 28th of 2009. Congratulations to all of them and thanking all of them for their wonderful service here in the Diocese of Sacramento. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless everyone. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy Ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, Countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Ministry of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of America, Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and longstanding support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley and Associates. We'd like to thank all the wonderful people and organizations, businesses in town and throughout the Diocese of Sacramento who have provided underwriting for the Bishop's Hour, some in the last few years, some have been with us for a very long time. If you would like to be an underwriter for the Bishop's Radio Hour, it's a wonderful opportunity to support this mission and also to support the diocese and also to get some recognition for your organization or for your business. The easiest way to do this is to give us a shout, send us an email, radio@scd.org, and we can give you all the details about helping to underwrite the Bishop's Radio Hour. Again, that's radio@scd.org.
We said